Thoughtful driving tips from Esso, number 3. This is Kieran. He's doing 70 on the motorway, on his way to a cheeky spa appointment, though his diary says he's visiting a client. Naughty Kieran. Lowering his speed to 60 could save him up to 9% in fuel on the journey. Enjoy that hot stone massage, Kieran. Slowing down a little.
Hey everyone, I'm Dan, and today's guest has probably done more things this morning than I've done in the last decade. He is a Grammy-winning musician, an Academy Award-winning filmmaker, a DJ, a teacher, author of multiple books, a podcaster, a web series host, and oh yeah, he's also the co-frontman for a little band you've probably seen in arenas or on The Tonight Show called The Roots. Please welcome the very busy Questlove. Quest, how are you?
Wow, that felt good to hear. Thank you. Even I was impressed. I was like, wow, this guy's done a lot. I can't wait to hear what this guy is. How are you?
Very good. Well, thanks for squeezing us in. And I got to ask, like, what is your coffee budget? I mean, how do you keep this energy up to pour into all this stuff?
You know, it's really weird. I joke with Tariq Black Thought about this a lot. He's the coffee person. He's the first thing. Don't even speak to me until I had my two cups of coffee. But not weird enough. Not a coffee person. Okay. However, I've been a matcha person. So
okay, right.
I'm a matcha guy.
Matcha man. That's
matcha. That's yes, weird. I got to be a matcha guy. Yeah.
So I want to ask you all about you and your productivity and all that creativity and all that great stuff. But I want to first ask you. So we all saw this video of Jane's Addiction's lead singer punching the guitarist on stage. Now, most of us were shocked. But as a guy who's been in a band for over 2 decades, were you like, yeah, I could see that?
You know what? I used to joke with journalists whenever they asked, like, okay, so the Beatles haven't lasted for 8 years, but you guys are on your 30th year. What's your secret? And I used to joke with them that, you know, the key to longevity for any band is 2 tour buses.
Okay.
That's what it is. It was... We discussed that in the group chat. We've laughed a few times in which thank God we've never ever gotten close to that level of pugilism.
Yeah,
or miscommunication. But I've right. definitely been there. I've definitely been there with and I know the frustration of people that are staunchly against in-ear microphones. I think sometimes having in-ear microphones makes a person feel claustrophobic.
Mm.
But it's also just leaving your comfort zone, which weird enough, it kind of ties into what I'm about now, like getting out of your comfort zone and getting out of your own way so that you can do what you got to do. Most bands are kind of extremely if you will, sort of laser focused on their comfort zone and never having space to budge or improvise for something new. And it's very unfortunate that happened. I know, knowing Perry and, I trust that they will have this worked out in less than a year. But yeah, I've been there where miscommunication leads to kind of a primitive act. For one point, I literally, because it wasn't necessarily a punch that came first, just a yelling the obscenities, fuck you, I thought, man, I can get into this song. Where can I find that on streaming? But
You know,
it's unfortunate. Yeah. That's what happens when you don't communicate.
Right, right. Well, so here's a weird thing. Well, weird to me or awesome to me. I went to high school with one of your bandmates, Captain Kirk Douglas. He was like 2 years older than me. And I could see that guy just, you know, he needs a punch sometimes. He's just always flying off. He's one of the sweetest, awesomest guys ever.
So, still is, man.
Kirk's, yeah.
Yesterday was his birthday. Yeah. Kirk
oh,
is,
nice.
He's rather an amazing person. Always. I'll say that of all of us, he still has his, like when it comes down to it, he's still a very passionate musician. There was kind of a point in my life where you get to a dangerous place where this starts to become a job.
Mm.
And that's kind of why I had to find other ways to express creativity.
Yeah.
Weird enough. One of those ways was doing the, this Balvenie web series that I host. Because yes. Sometimes you have to talk to other creatives to see the commonality. And, you know, most people just say, like, I will hang with musicians or other drummers. And I'm realizing now that, like, especially this year, I did things that I've never done. I went fishing in, you know, Austin. I went, like, there are other forms of creativity to do. And but Kirk is one of those people that, you know, I used to tease him a lot where, you know, he kind of has the curiosity of an 11-year-old, you know, or however old you think, like, Jim Henson's Muppets are. Like, he's always asking musicians on the show or comedians on, I'm at the Tonight Show right now, like,
yeah,
hey, how does this work? And yeah, tell me your process of that. So I'm actually following suit with Kirk. Yeah.
So you've got this web series called Quest for Craft, and season 4 launches actually today, October 16th, on the Balvenie YouTube channel. You've got all these conversations with people like Lin-Manuel Miranda and Bill Hader. And in those conversations, whose process has surprised you the most?
You know, America Ferrera was about kind of self-reflection. The thing is that, you know, the way that we choose the artists that come on the show, I have to find a commonality within myself. So, you know, the themes of this particular season is kind of self-reflection. Like, can you insert yourself inside of what the project you're doing? Mm. Authenticity, common, of course, you know, he and I kind of musically grew up together. But as far as like Lin-Manuel and Bill Hader, those are two friends of mine that I'm always kind of obsessed with and curious about how they think of things.
Yeah.
Or how they approach things. Especially with Lin-Manuel, who, you know, oftentimes I'll see artists kind of fall at the cracks when, like being involved in the Hamilton project, especially like when we start that, I think the summer of 2014 is when we started the Hamilton process. And, you know, at the time I just thought, I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool project, but having no idea that this is essentially Thriller, you know what I mean? Like,
okay. <Yeah. laughs>
I mean, essentially Hamilton is Thriller, the Thriller of Broadway.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that, you know, he's handling it with such grace in a way that I think any other person would almost be ripping their hair out at night trying to figure out what my next statement's going to be. And the thing is that Lin kind of reveals that, you know, oftentimes, sometimes the words flow out of him and from his head to his hand to paper. And sometimes he's stuck, but he, and not in that he never gives up in a type of cliché-ic, you know, never give up your dreams, kid. Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's true, but that also feels like just an empty cliche thing to say, like, never give up on your dreams. But he's diligent and persistent in terms of how he expresses himself. And, you know, it took him 7 years to do Hamilton and also to do In the Heights, and just as long to do his new project, The Warriors. Hmm. And, you know, I wanted to talk to him about that because I've never been in a situation in which it's ever taken me this long to complete a project. But this new Roots album is now going on year 10 of
wow.
You know, and I always, my engineer at one point was jokingly found an old poster, promotional poster for Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses. It's like, really, this is who you want to be, Amir? Yeah. Used to finish an album in 5 weeks and it was out already. But
right. I was wondering if Axl Rose was going to call you and be like, dude, come on, what are you doing?
That's what it feels like. But no, we're putting it to bed and it's definitely coming out next year. But
oh my God, that's great.
Yeah, I'll say that I'll say that the Lin-Manuel Persistence episode, and also with Haters Uncertainty. There was a point where I was so busy working on all these other projects, like, you know, I have like 3 documentaries I'm working on, and not to mention like 3 books also worked on, and there's still the Tonight Show and like 4 other projects that I haven't mentioned yet. That there was a point where kind of my first love was sitting on the side of the road, like with a flat tire, which was, of course, music. I mean, you know, the Roots is something that I can do with my eyes closed, but this year, you know, I told my manager that I wanted to do more. I haven't done a good like free jazz project since like the Philadelphia Experiment.
Mm.
And that was back in like 2000.
Yeah, right.
So it's almost been that long. So during the pandemic, you know, I did this album called Plum with David Murray, saxophonist David Murray, and Ray Angry, a keyboardist. We released it. We recorded it during the pandemic. It came out, I think, in 2022, but this year alone, I've been doing a lot of like really experimental free jazz, small club, experimentation projects, just to kind of get acclimated with my first love again. Which it's not about drumming or that thing. It's more about me still having a passion for music. So
that's
a long
awesome.
Answer to get to that place. But
no, that's beautiful. I love it. So with all these types of things, whether it is a film or a book or music, like in your head, do you have a feeling of this is what success is? This is what success means to me? Or does it vary from project to project?
You know, I used to be the person that had this destination thing until I realized the fable that the Roots are probably mirroring the most is the tortoise and the hare.
Mm.
Like we started in, like really, you know, we started in high school. Right. And it took 7 years out of leaving high school for us to get a record deal. And that felt like, oh, we made it. And then it's like, no, it's going to be another 7 years before you guys get to a place where you can get a little bit comfortable.
Right.
But then once you like get to that place, then you have to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
And then life kind of gets in the way. And then, you know, and I recommend to anyone that is in entertainment to find an alternative passion that you're keen on, which is why, you know, and it's not that means that you're going to be successful at it. Like the fact that Jordan wanted to try his hand at playing baseball
right.
Or Miles Davis for a second was going to boxing, and
I forgot about that.
Wow. Joni Mitchell was painting. You know, there's other other means to find your expression.
Are you going MMA? What's your deal?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, when we announced in 2009 that, hey, we're going to, I told everyone in 2007, 2008, when we did like our last kind of world tour, the last time which we like try to touch like every territory from Russia to parts of Asia we never been to, you know, to South America, to all over. People kind of thought I was doing the little boy that cried wolf thing, which was basically, you know, I tell the press, like, this might be your last time to see us this freely. Like, I know you're used to us coming around like four times a year, no matter what. Mm. But, and they kind of didn't believe me because it's like, well, you guys have been consistently coming here for 21 years. Like, what's going to make everyone says that, but it never happens. And then, of course, once we did the Tonight Show, which kind of cut our 250 days on the road schedule down to like a normal 60.
Wow.
You know, scarcity marketing. And suddenly, you know, promoters were like, please come back, please. You know, and like
right.
crying. And I never knew the power of the word no. Like,
yeah.
When you say no a lot, then suddenly there's extra zeros on that check. But but the point is that I used that time that I wasn't doing 24/7 on the road touring to look at other things, to look at how food is created and got into the food world. And, you know, I'm always on the eighth floor where they're shooting SNL and trying to figure out how that world works. And
right.
And then, so if anything, I became more busier coming to the Tonight Show, just trying other forms of art. And I think it's made me somewhat of a better creative now. So if the music feels different, if the music that comes out of us now feels different, it's because I think I put myself through a crash course of how to create.
We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors. You know, you mentioned Saturday Night Live, and obviously you're on the Tonight Show. You know, when you talk to, or when I talk to musicians, most of them say they're so jealous of comedians, and comedians are so jealous of musicians. And you're like, you're that, you somehow landed squarely in the middle. So what unites those worlds? Why are they so intertwined? And why are you landed right smack in the middle? You're doing it both.
Musicians have it easy because, especially me, I'm the one musician that really takes advantage of flaws and dust and mistakes. Okay. Most musicians, especially now in this kind of like short attention span, I got 10 seconds to make an impression to keep you watching me before you just swipe me to the right to go to someone else. For me, I personally believe that there's an art in imperfection and a kind of novice approach to things. Like, I'm not ready. Like, if you look at a lot of our greats, and unfortunately, if you look at a lot of our greats who have since then passed away, one of the most common character traits they have is this kind of chasing a dragon of perfection that really doesn't exist. I want it to be perfect. It must be perfect. Right. And usually people that want it to be perfect or over rehearses. There was a joke that George Clinton once told about Prince long ago, where he says when he first met Prince, he told his people, man, Prince is a funny cat, man. I never met a guy who rehearses his spontaneity. He's like, Prince is a guy that actually will rehearse his spontaneity. And, you know, I often was in my head, and that's the thing, like, we often I think as human beings get in our heads about being judged or not doing it right, or someone saying something behind our back or right in front of our face.
Right.
When really, you know, it's the key to life. And I learned this lesson maybe in March, which is the real key to conquering anything. Like, you can do anything you want. Will you be the best at it? No, you won't. But I think that if you're a curious and you ask questions and you do a lot more listening than you do talking, and you allow yourself the space to experiment and fail and sometimes improvise. And that's the thing with musicians. If I do a mistake, I do it twice, which that's like rule number one with improvisation. But I always wonder, like with chefs, like if you add too much da-da-da-da-da,
yeah.
Like, do you do it twice or do you throw it in the garbage?
And right.
They're like, nah, dude, we throw that shit in the garbage. which to me, besides comedy, I think musicians are the creatives that get the license to do whatever it is. Then it's like the Pee Wee Herman, I meant to do that.
Yeah, right, that right.
So, I don't worry too much about if I don't nail something perfectly. That's fine with me.
Can you give a little bit of advice on that front? Because, you know, we talk a lot about failure. You know, don't be afraid of failure. Embrace it. The lessons learned. And afterwards, learning those lessons, you find the strength in them. But in the moment, it sucks. You know, failing does suck. So how have you sort of embraced that mindset that you just described?
Well, you know, the one thing I learned about fear, and especially like our fear, and I think I brought this one of those, not, it wasn't last year. I think it was like 2 years before, and I forget who I was talking to. It could have been Gladwell. And I'm talking about the Balvenie Quest for Craft things. There's a thing in which I realized that maybe 85% of the fears that we have and the judgment we have, the two things I've learned is, number one, we are our harshest critic. Like, we'll say the meanest things to ourselves in our head that I would never allow you to tell me.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, all day I'll be like, ah, man. Like, say if, okay, so 3 weeks ago, my girl and I found out there were these like amateur art courses. You know, really they're sipping paints, but for us it's like, oh, our chance to do work with different paint palettes or mold a sculpture or something like that. And you know, mine was not that good as hers. But the thing is that, you know, oftentimes the things that we're afraid of, like 85% of the things that we're afraid of, have never ever happened to us.
Right.
You know, I think of my uncle who's like deathly afraid. There are two rappers, two world-renowned rappers to this day. And I'm like, wait, how do you tour Europe if you're afraid to get on planes? And they got to get on the Queen Mary like for 3 weeks.
What?
Dude, it's 21 days in the Queen Mary to get to for something you could do in 6 hours. But again, a lot of the fear that we have are things that never happen. And so, you know,
can you give us a lyric that would hint at their identities?
You know, I don't think it's a secret. I think Rakim said that in an interview once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like he doesn't like getting on an airplane, so he takes a boat.
A boat. Wow.
A boat to tour, you know, elsewhere. And, you know, personally, it's, I had to learn to ground myself, and I had to learn that, you know, my voice is the harshest voice in the room. And once I realized, and if I'm in any situation where like I'm being watched or paranoid, there's kind of like transcendental TM meditation exercises that I do that just ground me. And that's the most important thing. And that's what enables me to do things like, especially this year. Like this year, I bucket listed so many projects that I was afraid to always do. Like, you know, my kids' book just came out, The Idea in You.
Yeah.
And I had, like, I kind of had a paralyzing fear of just kids in general, because they're so honest. I once long ago, when like a third album came out, did a project, and I let someone, you know, someone playfully tricked me into like, hey, why don't you come to the school and speak to the kids and they'll be excited. The kids love you. Questlove, they love you. And, you know, I got there and kids were basically like, who's this? And so are there any questions? And they're like, yeah. Do you know like real celebrities like Andre 3000 and Mary J. Blige? Like, do you know a real star? And, you know, that caused this whole spiral.
Oh man, that's brutal.
Out of control, where I mess with kids too tough. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm good.
That's keep it great. Kids.
So that said, you know, releasing my The Idea in You book, which I desired to write a kid's book, but I think me imagining a rejection that really never existed in the first place was the thing that was holding me back. Me doing a lot of free jazz projects this year was also kind of an imagined thing of like me and like the audience, like throwing tomatoes on stage and boo, get off stage. And
right.
I never once thought like, yeah, they paid like $156 and came with a bag of tomatoes, Amir. Really? Like, that's what you think is going to happen. So
right.
I've learned to ground myself. So
excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm glad you have, cause you're pretty good at, as your trophy case will surely tell you, you're pretty good at the things that you've chosen to do. And we're the beneficiaries of all that. So that's awesome. And I know you've got to run. So I just wanted to get to one question, which was submitted on video. We don't have the video ready yet, but I'll just ask it. So this is from actually a former coworker of ours. He says, I'm a DJ. Mm-hmm. What is your number one song that is guaranteed to get people up and the party started?
You know what? Okay, so that's two questions.
Okay.
There's the song that gets the people up. One of the for me, one of the hardest parts of DJing is my first 10 records, especially if I'm coming in cold. Now, sometimes I'll have a warm-up person or an opening person who depends on their knowledge of the game. Some of them try to kill it, you know, which is kind of like, it's an unwritten no-no. Like if you're an opener DJ, it's not David and Goliath time. Like it's not your turn to outshow me. So there's some DJs that are very restrictive. Like, you know, they'll come with a list of things you're not allowed to play, which I'm not that guy. I'm like, play whatever you want. Matter of fact, I want you to play all the hits, because more than likely I'm gonna play like Happy Feet by Kermit the Frog. And I've done that a few times. So what I'll say is that there are two Spike the Punch moments. There's the song that I know is gonna be the icebreaker that will make people feel comfortable enough to be one of the first. No one wants to be the first person to dance. So if it's an empty floor, I'd tell my light person to make it completely dark so people aren't self-conscious of, like,
yeah,
I'm the first person on the dance floor. So for me right now, dance hall music is kind of the universal calling card of probably next to like Bob Marley's music, dance hall. So there's a song called Murder, She Wrote by Shaka Demus and Pliers.
Yes.
That rhythm is almost 100% of the time I can't never miss. Matter of fact, when you play that, you better know the next 20 songs that are that level of perfection that will keep them there. But most DJs kind of follow, you know, not to play into any gender norms, because I think people express themselves the same when dancing, but most DJs will always take the cue from the women. There's always a dance circle that starts first.
Yeah.
Of like six or seven girlfriends in a circle, you know, while other people watch with envy and try to figure out like how to get in proximity, and then the dance floor feels. So usually with classic 90s dance hall reggae, that's how you open that door. Now, lately, my Spike the Punch, holy shit, did he just do that moment? Because I'm a guy that likes shocking people, because it's very much expected for me to, you know, like looking at me, you're like, okay, of course, like eye roll, Michael Jackson's Don't Stop Till You Get Enough is a Captain Obvious one, or Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison is a Captain Obvious one. But me, I, as a DJ, I love nothing better than to somehow like kidney punch or sucker punch someone that's not expecting. What the hell is that? Oh my God, is he doing that? So for the longest, that record used to be Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. Which in no matter of fact, in the environment that it's not supposed to be in, which, you know, I'll play it for a pop crowd, I'll play it for a wedding crowd. And if I'm with a hip hop crowd, I'll still put it on. And they might stop for 3 seconds like, no, you didn't. But it's like, dude, we're all the same. We all watched MTV in 91. We know the song and it works. However, my level of trolling is masterful. And if you find the perfect song as the chaser, find out what happens. And you gotta wait. You gotta wait. Not in the beginning, not in the middle. I usually give people 2.5 hours to get a little bit tipsy. Shout out to Bell Vinny. I give people like 2.5 hours to get a little tipsy. And if you play the theme to the Golden Girls, yo, they'll hear the intro. They'll collectively stop like I'm Marty McFly doing a guitar solo and trying to be good. They'll look at me. And then right when that bridge comes up with, if I threw a party.
Yeah.
They all collectively sing it like they've watched that show all their life.
And
it's
like, God,
I caught you. All of you know this song. Stop. So the theme, Thank You For Being a Friend, is one of the most shocking moments that, where I've shocked an audience. And these are people that like have their coat in their hands, like, oh, I'm ready to go. I did 2 hours.
Oh,
and
man. So,
but you have to, to make it perfect, the next song has to be the right song. And that's where you're the king of the night.
That's on you. Oh, man. That's amazing. Did not expect that. I'm sucker punched and I want to get up and dance and sing along. So, So Questlove, thank you so much for squeezing us in, as we've described. Very thank busy you. Man, but I want to encourage everybody, check out A Quest for Craft.
Yes.
Season 4 launches today, October 16th, on the Belvany YouTube channel. And you can follow Quest on Instagram and questlove.com and all kinds of places. Dude, thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for your art. We love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.